This is Art in Focus, brought to you by the McMullen Museum of Art at Boston College. My name is Nisha Momin, class of 2021, and a McMullen student ambassador. I'd like to welcome you in listening to our third installation of four episodes on the Indian Ocean Current Six Artistic Narratives exhibition. This episode features Professors Angeles Picone and Sylvia Sellers Garcia of the History Department. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy.
Hello, everyone. My name is Angeles Picone. I'm an assistant professor of history at BC. I teach modern Latin American history. That's what my research focuses on and my courses. In general, I teach courses about borders in Latin America, spatial history, and so you can see already the connections with the exhibit. Now I'm working on my book project, which is on the borders between Chile and Argentina across the Andes. I'm interested in how people living in border regions, people crossing them, and people governing them, how they all had different understandings of space and the environment, and how these different understandings and experiences of space led them to have different ideas of what the nation, Argentina or Chile, should look like. So this is what I'm working on.
My name is Sylvia Sellers Garcia. I'm an associate professor in the History Department, and I work on colonial Latin America. Specifically, I work on Central America and Guatemala, which in the colonial period extended from what is today southern Mexico to Panama. And I understand this part of the world as part of the larger Spanish Empire. So some of my work is transatlantic as well. The longer trajectory of my work connects really closely with this because I worked on spatial history. I had some overlaps with Professor Picone's work in my first project. Now my work has moved into a different area. I'm working on the history of criminality, the construction of criminality in the colonial period, with a particular focus on Guatemala City. And it's a little bit more tangential, but I think one of the ways in which my work connects with this exhibit is because of my current focus on race and policing in the late 18th century. And I've been looking at the ways in which the police in the late 18th century construct certain people as criminals, and that as a result of this period, certain activities are thought of in criminal ways that they weren't previously. And to me, this touches very closely on how in our own period, we have criminalized activities around border crossing and migration. The courses I teach at BC often actually connect the colonial and national periods. I teach a lot of thematic courses, like one that I'm teaching right now on Mexico between fact and fiction, a different kind of border, the border between factual material and fictional material. I also teach a course on the Spanish Inquisition that also bridges Spain and the New World. So I'm really interested in looking at thematic courses that allow us to ponder big picture questions about both the region and about history more generally in terms of how we understand truth-telling about the past, how we're able to trust primary source documents, and how we construct narratives that we find persuasive about our own remembered past.
I think that we had both like a favorite piece. Like for me was the flags. I mean, they were all very compelling, but for me, the flags were amazing. And for Sylvia, the speaking wall. So the flag installation is actually, it doesn't have that title. It is untitled, or there is no border here. And what you see is a wall drawing made with self-adhesive tape. This is yellow tape. And it's a sketch of a flag. It would remind people of the American flag because it has a lot of stripes. But the flag is very loose, it's very sketchy, like it doesn't have a definite shape. And in these stripes, there is text written also with the same tape. And there's also text inside the tape that says there's no border here. And the text reads, "I tried very hard to cut the sky in half, one for my lover and one for me. But the sky kept moving and clouds from his territory came into mine. I tried pushing it away with both my hands, harder and harder, but the sky kept moving and clouds from my territory went into his. I brought a sofa and placed it in the middle, but the clouds kept floating over it. I built a wall in the middle, but the sky started to flow through it. I dug a trench, and then it rained, and the sky made clouds over the trench. I tried very hard to cut, and there's no end to that sentence, and then there's an empty stripe at the end of the flag. So there's no ending here. This is the English version, but there's also a Spanish version of the same flag, with the same text written in Spanish, and with the text inside the tape also written in Spanish. So I think there are two things that stand out to me about, I mean, there are many things that we can talk about this work, but there are two things that I think connect borders and art. And this is the aspects of the location of this installation in the museum and the particularity or the temporality of this installation here and now. So for those of you who didn't have the privilege of going to the museum, to the exhibit, I did at the beginning of the year, and I experienced this. And then if you do the virtual tour, this would happen too. As you go through the door and you have the exhibits to your right and your left, you see on the other end of that main door one of the flags. And you're going to go through the exhibit, and then you move closer to the flag. And then when you move closer, you can realize that there's text in it and that you can read it, and there's text inside the tape. And then you turn around and there's the other flag. So it's this kind of surprise of the installation that it keeps on going. It doesn't stop with that first encounter, with that first gaze that you had, that you thought, okay, so this is what I'm going to see, a flag with text, and no, it's not. There's more to it. So that's one aspect that I wanted to highlight. And the second one is the aspect of contingency, of how I was very fascinated about this in the exhibit in general, but in the flag in particular. So in general, we assume, society thinks that art is very unique and static. And we learn art, when we're kids, through masterpieces that are very unique. And those masterpieces travel from museum to museum, and you see the same object in different sites. But in the case of the installations that we have in this exhibit, and the case of the flags in particular, these are unique. This is someone that put the tape on the museum's walls. So there's no other installation that is going to be exactly the same. I know that the museum has instructions from the artist, but it's not precisely the same. It is not going to be the same piece of art. And that historical contingency, that those assumptions that we have about borders, are the same that we have about art. This is the same assumptions that students come to class, to my Borders and Frontier class, and the ones that we unpacked the most, that borders, like art, they are not fixed and they are not atemporal. They are very historical contingent. And that means they are fluid and that they can change.
That's really interesting, Ángeles. Those reflections had just simply not occurred to me. It's so striking how you can see the same work in different ways. I think I experienced, as we'll talk about with the wall, I experienced this whole exhibit very personally because I wasn't using my critical brain when I showed up. I showed up to this exhibit with my husband and my son for the opening. And while my husband, who's a sculptor, whenever we go to an exhibit, he gets sort of special treatment. He gets to go through everything and see it all for himself and get to experience it. And I'm like, all right, I'll take the noisy child. You be the artist now. I'll take the noisy child. And so I was with the noisy child, who really was not being that noisy. He was being wonderful. But we were walking through it together, and I was in my mom mode. And we came into this room And the flag, as you say very aptly, is pretty much the first thing you see. And I believe, I can't remember now the way the orientation is, but I believe the first one I read was the one in Spanish. So my mother's Guatemalan, and a lot of the people who are blunt force immigration policy now addresses on the border are Guatemalan. And while I know that so many people are affected by this, there is no way to not read this personally when you are either an immigrant or you have a family member who is. And so I read this flag first in Spanish, and I found it so moving, like so poignant to think about this this effort of sundering, you know, the way in which the flag says essentially the border is not real. You know, the border's not real. It's we just try to create it. You can no more separate than you can sunder the sky, right? And then the funny thing is I found it so poignant, and then when I read the English version, it's like it just vanished. The content didn't speak to me that way. And it was only later, because I wasn't in critical mode, it was only later that I was thinking about, you know, why is that? Like when when it was in English, it seemed kind of like a journal entry in a college journal, you know, like the ruminations of a young person. And in contrast, in Spanish, it had the force of reality to it. And this is clearly not to minimize the power of the words. What I'm trying to say is that one speaks to the situation in Spanish. And I don't know if this was partly what the artist intended, but what I felt was an incredible sense of the English flag doesn't have to worry about this in the same way that the Spanish flag has to worry about this. the English flag is not coming out of that real sense of being split in half, whereas the Spanish flag is. And then the last thing I'll say about it is that before I even read the text, I should have mentioned this first, but before I even read the text, of course it is visible as a flag. But the second impression that you have, or that I had in looking at it, is that it's lined paper, that the flag creates lined paper, and that to me suggested, you know, you may write upon it what you wish. You know, you may write upon this flag what you wish to write, because it's just, as you pointed out, the last line is blank. So yeah, those are my thoughts on the flag.
I think that I was surprised to see Spanish. I Indian Ocean Current. So you read the abstract of the exhibit. We know one of the curators. So I was very surprised to see Spanish, because I wouldn't have associated, of course, the Indian Ocean with the Spanish language. And the flags here, as you mentioned, they don't say anything about the border. I mean, they evoke a border, but we were all thinking about the border, the one that everyone calls the border, right? The US-Mexico border. We're not thinking about the US-Canada border or the border between Mexico and Guatemala. It's a very specific one because it has this bilingual aspect. And when I was revisiting the exhibit for today, I was thinking, why is the Spanish so surprising if the whole purpose of the exhibit is to show how, like, if we look at nature, if we look in this case, the clouds, the sun, the sky, if we look at nature, there are no borders, which is the kind of the premise about the Indian Ocean and the currents around the Indian Oceans, that climate change affects everyone around it, that a pandemic affects everyone, that it doesn't stop at a border. And we have seen this very, very clearly throughout this year. And I think that I could make sense of it now at the end of 2020, and I couldn't figure it out at the beginning. And the way you also said it, I think it also helped me understand it in that way, which is, again, one of the, at least one of the things that I try students to think about the fluidity of borders. There's a survey that I ask always on the first day of class, and is something like, do we live in a bordered world? And they say, yes. Do we need borders? And everyone agrees that we need borders, but they disagree on what is a border, how does it look like, how do you enforce it? And then, you know, we have a semester to unpack all that. But I think this, the pair of the flags or the lined paper speaks so powerfully to that, and to that silent connection with the relationship between borders and nature, you know, somehow connected to the rest of the exhibit.
Yeah, I have to admit that now that I think about it, based on what you're saying, there's something else that's a little odd about it, which is that a flag is a marker of identity, but it's not, I don't see it as quite equivalent to border marking. You know what I mean? So it does something a little sideways there to the notion of what the border is or how the border works, because it's really, to me, the flag is only indirectly, this is what I mean. A flag is only indirectly about borders and directly about identity, and what how people imagine themselves, how they, around which elements they choose to construct themselves, what symbols they choose to show themselves, to represent themselves. So there's, Gupta's obviously aware of the other ways of marking borders. In some ways, all her work is about this. So for her to specifically choose a thing that is not border-ish, you know, that is only sideways to the border, is itself very interesting.
Yeah, and connected to that is the unfinished business of these flags, that they're not complete. And that's okay. We don't need them to be complete to understand them or to react to them, mm-hmm. which evokes that dynamism of both of identity, of community building, of borders, more generally speaking, not only as lines on maps, but also as markers of difference.
Mm-hmm. So I'll say a little bit about this one, Speaking Wall. Speaking Wall is a space in the exhibit that has a small screen that sort of is projected onto the wall. It's not a screen, it's a small light. It looks like a little bar of sort of blue-green light. There's sound. There's a line of bricks leading to the wall. And the line of bricks is itself separated from the rest of the gallery space by a line on the floor. And once again, because of the way that I arrived at this exhibit, apparently I interacted with it wrong, which my husband, the sculptor, tells me is just fine. He says it's great. But here's what happened. So when I came up to this with my then 6-year-old, I thought that the bricks were themselves the wall, and that we were meant to stand on either side of them. So he was on one side of the bricks and I was on the other. And, you know, part of my brain was just making sure that he wasn't wrecking anything and trying to sort of half entertain him, as you do when you're with a 6-year-old. And so here we were on opposite sides of the bricks, and then the narration, which apparently is movement activated, began. And we were alone in the space, I should mention. Everyone was downstairs listening to the curators talk about the show. And so we were completely alone in this upstairs space. And I'll just read, I don't think I should read the whole thing, but I'll just read a little bit of what this narration says, if that's okay. So imagine that you are me and you are on one side of these bricks and then your child is on the other. Step away one step. Go a bit further away. Go back. Step away one step. Stay. I am the wall in your house that you are unable to see. You walk past me and you may never know you came. You took, you left. I continue to bleed. Step a bit closer. Step a bit closer. 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 Well, you get the idea. So what he and I were doing was engaging with each other over those bricks. We weren't engaging the wall. And so instead of it being about the directions delivered by a kind of automata and following those directions and then being forced to look inward. For me, it was much more about being pushed away and then closer and then away from my son, you know, across this wall. And I was unprepared for how real that would feel, of course, because of border separations. And even though the full narration is not quite about that, you know, when you listen to the full narration, that's not entirely where this is going. It's intending to I think unravel a little bit what this notion of the wall is. I only heard this one part of it and was sort of like hit by it like a gut punch. You know, the idea of suddenly being placed in this position where I'm being told to distance myself from my child. It's not that I hadn't imagined that before. I think that probably all of us who have a ounce of compassion have read about those horrible separations and thought about what that must be like, even if just for a second, because you can't bear to think about it for longer. But this exhibit just sort of plunged it on me unexpectedly. And so it was very emotional. And at the same time, because I was here with my son, one of the things I really try to do is not bring some of the more gruesome realities of our world crashing down on his head in a way that are really incomprehensible for a six-year-old. And so I had to push it aside and not really think about the emotion and dwell on it. But it just sat with me and became this source of unease, really, a source of unease that was not fully considered. And it had just been this one glancing interaction. And so, you know, I'm really grateful to the artwork for allowing me this utter misinterpretation of the piece, but that nonetheless prompted in me some really painful, but I think eye-opening experiences that couldn't have happened in any other way, in a safe space, in what was objectively a safe space.
Well, I didn't experience it like that, but for two reasons. So the first, actually the only time that I went to the exhibit, this was when the curators were giving a guided tour. So we were a large group and we were, you know, we were being very inquisitive about it, very academically engaging with it. And that's a different type of engagement. And it can be fun, but it's very rational sometimes. And I just came from seeing the flags. So when I saw the bricks lined up on the floor, which stand up as a wall, like there's no ambiguity about it. I stood, you know, at a distance. And because this is an interactive installation, I think only one person can hear at the time, and we were a large group, that wasn't going to happen, not at that moment. But afterwards, I remember Sylvia sharing her experience with me. We were talking about these works after we both engaged with them. And I always wanted to come back and, you know, COVID hit. But I realized, like, I should walk on this wall and experience the these two aspects, sides. I don't know what word I'm looking for, but the auditory experience of having this text read to you or said to you and you're responding to it with your body, which is a different type of engagement in art that we normally see, right? We usually are very, as spectators, very passive about it. And then suddenly you have to engage. And as you describe, Sylvia, it's very organic, the reaction that you have, right? It cannot be academically dissected on the spot. So I'm sorry I missed that opportunity, and I cannot wait to go to the museum and actually listen to this. But when I was reading the text, it looked like a dance. Move back, move forward, step closer. You have this sections where you know it's talking about the border and about the border wall and the wall telling you come closer, stop, go back, and that rejection or that acceptance. And there's a section where it asks, or the wall wonders where you come from, where you were born, where you grow up, where you live. And to me, those words stood out because I was born in one place, I grew up in another place, I went to college in another place, the same place where I was born, I went to grad school in another place, and now I live in a different place. So if people ask me, where are you from? That's a very weird question. As a border crosser myself, not that the type of immigrant that you would see in the news, but I still need a visa to be here. And so that the ambiguity of where do you come from hits the brick wall on the floor very harshly. And to me, that was the most impactful part of the piece, but one of the most unexpected reactions that I had, especially because before that wonderment about where do you come from, the wall is telling you, I no longer need your ID. And to me, ID, you know, my identification, my identity, it is rooted in where I'm from, whatever that is. And it's not one place, right? It's a sequence of places. And I think many people can identify with that, like you, Silvia, yourself, like with the heritage from Guatemala. So I thought in this installation, it was very interesting, the interplay between the body moving and reacting to words that we are not usually invited to do in this type of art. We sometimes do it in dance or in acting, right?
Yeah, I feel like the dance that you describe is really striking. And, you know, afterwards, reading the words and understanding more fully where they were going, to me, it had a kind of almost like a sort of seductive tone to it, like a kind of luring. And that's striking given the tone in which it's read. If you remember, it's almost like mechanical, I would say. And so that left me thinking about the range of emotions that people experience when they are drawn to walls, to borders, like the ways in which people are compelled to move. What is it that makes one move, and what is it that you dream about, and what is it that you are disappointed by, and that kind of dance, you know, the dance of the shifting emotions and the changing expectations and the ups and downs and all of that, that were not part of my original experience, but that I saw very much in once I had read the entire recording.
There's a text that we read in one of my classes about, this is about borders, but not directly connected to the US-Mexico border. But there's a text about the construction of a dam in the border between Brazil and Paraguay. So this is south of Brazil. And when they constructed this dam, the Brazilians had to displace many of the farmers living there. And they encouraged them to move elsewhere. And one of the places that they encouraged them moving to was to Paraguay. And so these Brazilian farmers now living in Paraguay were not Paraguayans, but were not Brazilians. So they were in this liminal place. And I think what you're talking about, expectations and the changing emotions and how people envision what drives people to a wall versus the experience of that border, like the balance between the two that forced them to make that decision. You know, sometimes it's not entirely up to them. There are external forces that push them into the wall. But it made me think about these liminal spaces that we find near border walls. In the news, we have recently seen about camps in the border and the situation with COVID, the situation in like the sanitary situation in general, in addition to separation of families, in addition to the poverty and the huge emotional strain that they endure. And I think that maybe the walking on the bricks, which I don't want to say it was the right way, maybe the intended way. I don't know. I want to try what you did, Sylvia, honestly. But that walking in between the two places that the wall divides maybe also help us understand these liminal spaces. I think there's this underlying issue of, you know, the dance, maybe it's a very, like, it sounds like a positive thing. And I like how you talked about the seductive or, like, the imagining land beyond the border as promised land. This is where our problems are going to be solved. And there are a lot of requirements attached to that.
One of the reasons I didn't think that you were supposed to walk on the walls because it just looks so, like, unsteady. It was like, I can't step on those. Those are not meant to be walked on. It was like my initial thought, right?
Yeah, I remember walking and just like walking really fast so I wouldn't fall. Like,
well, I think one of the big takeaways for me from our conversation is just the different experiences that one can have with these artworks. I think that is generally true, but for these in particular, I'm struck by how the emptiness made a really particular experience for me, whereas the sociability of your experience, Angeles, made a very different experience for you. You were in a group, you were being led through, whereas I was there kind of alone, bouncing off the walls, and that led to a very different engagement with these works, which is itself very striking. I can't help but notice that for both of us, our kind of baggage, if you will, our background surely informed how we were reading these pieces and experiencing them. I think that to me that connects more broadly with how even people who don't have any close relationship to the border have an opinion about the border, you know? There's this way in which we all claim it, you know, we all sort of have a voice that we want to have heard on it. And that, I think, resonates really in really interesting ways with what I see to be one of Gupta's larger points, especially with the thread and glue pieces that we didn't talk so much about, which is the deeply unnatural making of borders in the natural world. I mean, it's there in the flag, right? Like the notion that the borders are not real, not permanent, not able to even be fixed. And so it's striking to me that this is one of her larger interventions is to sort of question the realness of borders, or to maybe more accurately to signal their ephemerality, to signal how fragile they are, how imagined they are. And yet for all of us, the border means something. However much they may be hard to pin down, the border means something.
Well, you summed up so well. Of course, I agree with you. I think I was very impressed about how the personal histories of people that come to the exhibit are going to affect how they interpret them. And sometimes, you know, as scholars, we forget about that, about the emotional reaction to art, and therefore its importance in our lives, in our campus, in our classrooms, because they pose this, the possibility of interpreting an intervention, borders are unnatural, in different ways. In which ways are borders unnatural for our students? Recently, I wanted to share this earlier, but I think this is the place to do it. I'm teaching a class on borders and frontiers, and for an assignment, students had to get creative in ways to reflect about borders. And a pair of students, they made a very good video, and at the end of the video, they show different borders that they encounter on campus. Places that different students cannot access. So for example, they showed the fence that divides the mods from the rest of campus. And only seniors can go into the MODs and the rest of students cannot go into the MODs and things like that. And places, yeah, borders on our campus. And I thought it was very powerful because I wouldn't have thought about, you know, the fence and the MODs as a border. I cannot go there, of course, but their experiences of space, their experiences across campus, every day they encounter these borders. And so I think that's why these type of exhibits, you know, exhibits in general, and these exhibits that force us to rethink assumptions are important for our community in general, because they complement the academics that we foster so eagerly inside the classroom or inside our Zoom classrooms now.
That concludes this episode of Art in Focus. Thank you for listening, and be sure to visit The Terrace, the Macmullen Student Publications page, to find more episodes in the series. This episode was produced by Rachel Brody, the Macmullen Graduate Assistant and a doctoral candidate in the History Department. It was mixed and edited by Nisha Momin, Class of 2021, and thank you to Rachel Chamberlain, the Macmullen Manager of Education, and Megan Minahan, Class of 2022, who lent production support. And finally, to our Publications Committee, who uploaded these videos on The Terrace.